Happy Halloween, everyone. Larry Mueller here. And in the spirit of Halloween today, we're going to talk about ghost stories and zero in on Great Lakes ghost stories, some superstitions, some serpents. There's ship killers. There's all kinds of stories that Frederick Stonehouse of Marquette, Michigan, has been able to collect. He's the author of more than a dozen books about Great Lakes maritime history. His books include Haunted Lakes and Haunted Lakes 2, published by Lake Superior Port Cities Incorporated. Really pleased to have him with us today. And you may have some questions for him about the ghost stories from the Great Lakes, and we hope you'll join in with your questions or comments as we move along today. If you're in the Madison area, you can reach us at 263-1890, 263-1890. Anywhere else, it's toll-free at 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234. Give us a call with your questions and comments. Fred Stonehouse with us by phone. Frederick, hi. Thank you for taking time to be with us today.
Well, thank you very much for having me on this special day.
It is a kind of a special day.
Oh, it's certainly one of the best times of the year, I think, when all the ghosts and goblins stories can come out and everybody can kind of, I think, enjoy Halloween.
Well, I tell you what, it's been, about 10 years since Haunted Lakes was published, and you said in your preface in that one that you worried about doing this book of ghost stories because it could damage your professional reputation. What was the reaction to the book by your peers then, and what is the reaction today?
Well, I think the reaction was very good because folks realized what I had essentially done was go in and collect or take as many of the old stories as I could find, the ones of ghost stories and haunted ships and ghost ships and sea serpents and sailing superstitions and kind of put those into a book format and be able to attribute all of those particular stories and tales. So it wasn't simply a collection of fiction stories that somebody wrote. Under the guise of Great Lakes ghost stories. They really were the old stories from the lakes that folks could kind of trace back the history on and make some determination about where they started, where they came from. And to do all of that, I think, in the spirit of not trying to write history, because it's not, but certainly trying to produce the fabric, I think, that holds our history together and makes it so fantastic. So the reaction's been very positive.
Well, you even relate an incident that happened in, I think it was 1993, in the Sturgeon Point Lighthouse Museum. That's on the shore of Lake Huron. You had a visit. You visited. What happened during that visit to your visit to that lighthouse?
Well, first of all, I'm not a ghost hunter. I am the least sensitive guy you're going to find in the world to talk to the folks on the other side. But I was in this very nice little museum, and I was doing some research for a book I was writing on the old life-saving service. And as I was up on the second floor of the lighthouse, which they have set up as a museum, I had the most strange feeling of being watched, that somebody else was there. I wasn't alone. And I don't pick this kind of thing up, but the hair on the back of your neck is just standing up and almost vibrating. So as I go through the process of using some of the photography and copying that with a copying stand, I kept turning this light off every time I was leaving the room, and then when I would come back, the light would be back on again. And this went through three or four iterations, and finally I said, I'm out of here. I'm done. And so I leave the building, and of course I find the gal that's the curator there and just ask her, do you guys have any ghosts in the lighthouse? And she laughs and says, no, there's no ghosts in the lighthouse. But as I'm leaving, she said, but wait a minute, we do have a problem with the lights coming on and off all the time. So I don't know. But again, that certainly was something that brought it home to me, I think, that perhaps there is something going on that we can enjoy.
Yeah, and there are some wild stories out there, aren't there? Some almost unbelievable stories that you and maybe they are unbelievable to some, a lot of people. I don't know.
Well, I'm convinced that every lighthouse is haunted.
Yeah,
I'm convinced the problem is simply find the right person at the right time at the right lighthouse, ask them the right question, and you're going to get the right answer. And that either means that somebody's trying to tell you a story, which may or may not have any validity, don't know, or simply that you have people that are more sensitive to this kind of thing, and maybe, like me, the hackles on the back of their neck are going up.
And there are not only lighthouses, but there are ghost ships out there, even.
Oh, there's a pile of ghost ship stories on the Great Lakes. One of them, the one I really enjoy the most, I think there's two, and one would be certainly the Griffin, which is LaSalle's old exploration ship dating from 1679, when he brought it into Green Bay as part of a trip that was going to be an exploration of the lower Mississippi. And he sends it on back to Niagara out on Lake Erie where the ship was built, and of course he loads it up with furs to pay for the work that he's doing exploring for the king. And on the way there, the ship will disappear. And with all hands, five men aboard, never a body recovered, no evidence of the ship. It simply has sailed off into a crack in the lake, as the old-time sailors would say. And that has become really the holy grail of Great Lake shipwrecks. Where is the Griffin? And it's only been found probably 25 times by 25 different people, all of which are dead certain they found the Griffin. And, of course, each time it turns out to be more of a fig Newton of their imagination than anything else. But the old-time sailors believe that just before you had a storm coming in up in northern Lake Michigan or in the Straits of Mackinac area, you would very often see the ghost ship Griffin come out of a storm cloud and just hang there for a few minutes and then again just kind of disappear in the grayness. And she would always be the forewarner of more bad weather to come. So goes the old story.
That's a great story. Boyd in Milwaukee has a question or comment. Boyd, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hey, thank you, Larry. Happy Halloween to both of you.
To you as well.
Oh, thank you. Well, in Milwaukee, just a couple comments, and then I do have a question. Some of the stories that you hear down here, I personally am a skeptic, but some of the ones that I found really intriguing were, well, the Pfister Hotel, they said, was haunted, and I guess that's actually been on national television. There's a cigar bar called Shakers, which supposedly has a ghost in there as well, and then I remember reading this wasn't so much a haunting, but just north of the city, there was a small house with a lot of strange artwork outside of it that was called the Witch's House, and supposedly an elderly woman had lived there, and there were, you know, stories going on about her as well. She, I know, did pass on, I think in the late 80s, and either her granddaughter or her niece, you know, would actually say, she was just an artist. So I thought those were some interesting stories from the Milwaukee area. My question is this, though, to your guest, in his research, not so much on ghosts, has he ever had any stories in the Great Lakes area regarding the vampire myth? Because when I took a tour in New Orleans many years ago that they had that was strictly a vampire tour, the guide was excellent. He really got you involved, and, you know, I'm still a skeptic, but some of his stories, they really had to make you raise your eyebrow a few times. It was quite interesting, really.
Mm. Well, what about that? Any vampire stories?
Well, the only one that comes to mind was a vampire tale that was placed on a ship in the Great Lakes. I think it was in Lake Huron, where, it almost becomes a parody of the very traditional vampire story of the ship transporting the vampire in the coffin coming from the old country to the new country, and, of course, gets loose on the ship and eventually manages to do in the crew. Now, whether true or false, how can we gauge, can't tell, but obviously there's a tale that involves that, and that mostly occurs, I think, or occurred, at least the setting of it was up in northern Lake Huron.
Interesting. Thanks, Boyd. Thanks for calling. Steve in Hudson, your turn. Hi, Steve.
Hi, love the show. Hey, I was just up in Bayfield, and I picked up a book. I wonder if you heard of it. It's the Wisconsin Road Guide to Haunted Locations, but it gives me the directions on how to get these places, but I want to know, are there any tips for those of us seeking these out? What should we prepare to encounter?
Again, I'm not a ghost hunter. That's a very good book, by the way. It really lays it out. And for folks that want to try and, instead of following the maritime trail, follow the spiritual trail, that's certainly a great document to use. The few ghost hunts that I've been involved in, and probably a dozen or so, I think the trick would be simply to go in with an open mind and be enough of a skeptic in you that you're trying to find what is the real reason I'm seeing what I'm seeing, what's the scientific basis for it, as opposed to just believing any old splash in the night means there's a sea monster out there.
Okay. And sea monsters, you've got some sea monsters in your books, too.
Oh, absolutely. Again, we can hold our heads as high as the folks in Loch Ness easily. the eastern end of the lakes on Lake Ontario, there's a local monster known as Kingstie, just outside of Kingston, Ontario, there where the St. Lawrence River comes in. And he's been seen so much that the locals have literally brought him into the city as an honorary citizen, I think. reputedly about 40-foot long, snake-like creature, or head like a horse, eyes described as glowing pits of fire. and that's a reoccurring theme throughout many of the Great Lakes sea serpent stories. Had one about 1905 or so off of Whitefish Point in Lake Superior, where the captain and mate of a steamer, the Currys, supposedly watched the 40-foot sea serpent swim along with the ship for a good 10 minutes before it finally disappears. So I got lots of stories. Haven't found a mermaid yet, though. I keep hoping I'm going to find a good mermaid.
Thank you, Steve, for calling. Paul in New Berlin, it's your turn. Hi, Paul.
Hi. Thank you very much. I've called in relationship to a project I'm working on with called an Operation SOS to try to save the Coast Guard station down in Milwaukee's lakefront. It's been had a number of fires in there, and it hasn't really been in use for about 10-15 years since the former Indian Community School was there. And they're voting to demolish it, but we're trying to save it for a community resource center and a cultural reconciliation council. While with some Native American in the community praying for that, it was brought to my attention by one of the spiritual elders that a medicine man said it was being protected by spider spirits. And we had a vision for have it be a center, a virtual center for the World Wide Web, so we thought that was perfect. But there was yesterday I was talking to some other Native Americans, and they spoke about that. They thought there were ghosts and possible strange spirits around that station there. And it used to be a life savings center, and I was wondering, it's all burnt out. It's a perfect haunted house type of situation. But I was wondering if you've heard any stories about anything surrounding the Coast Guard station on the lakefront in Milwaukee.
In Milwaukee, well, okay.
On a serious nature, I also serve as president of the U.S. Life Saving Service Heritage Association. And we're a national group, about 350 members, professional historians, as well as historic architects and the like. And we've been very concerned with the efforts to try and save that station because it is a very important part of Milwaukee history. And I know that we've given letters of support to different organizations and groups locally, hoping that they'll be able to put the package together, because that's something we can't do. We don't have the funding, but we certainly can help to point people in the right direction to help. And we've been successful with a number of stations throughout the country. And hopefully that's one that, too, the local community will be able to save. Regarding the haunted history of the station, absolute blank. I've heard nothing at all regarding Milwaukee Station. That said, many of the stations that were involved with early life-saving history do claim to have ghosts associated with them. But again, I've heard nothing specific to Milwaukee.
Thank you. Could
yes.
Create my email, if you could send creationkind@yahoo.com, if you could send any information and how we can contact you to
sure.
put in a bringing a lot of civic organizations together to try to save it. So it's last minute. They voted money to actually demolish it in the county budget. So we're trying. It's a last minute effort here.
Yep, will do.
All right. Thank you very much for calling. Anna and Powers Lake, we'll go to you next. But just remind you all, we're talking today with Frederick Stonehouse of Marquette, Michigan. He's the author of more than a dozen books about Great Lakes maritime history, including a couple of books, one called Haunted Lakes and Haunted Lakes 2, published by Lake Superior Port Cities Incorporated. I'm Larry Mueller. Jim Packard, our producer here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Frederick Stonehouse, our guest, as we talk with him about Great Lakes ghost stories, superstitions, and serpents. And by the way, Fred, you've got so many books. And I know you have a website, and that might be a good place for people to go to see all the different books you have.
Sure. Just Frederick Stonehouse, and that's F-R-E-D-E-R-I-C-K, Stonehouse, like it sounds, .com. And that's one I use just to kind of keep people informed and abreast with what's going on and what's been published.
All righty. Well, by the way, if you want to join in with a question, give us a call. The number is 1-800-642-1234. Or if you're in the Madison area, reach us at 263-1890. Got a question or an experience to share? We'd love to hear from you. And now let's go to Anna in Powers Lake. Anna, hi. Thank you for waiting.
Hi, thanks. Happy Halloween.
To you as well.
Thank you. I guess it's appropriate. I'm dressed as a pirate today for celebrate. So, but I used to work in the Museum of Science Industry on the U-505, which is the captured German submarine that they have there, and I was one of the tour guides. And there's all sorts of stories about it being cursed, where the captains, the first two captains died, one of them by his own hands, and all sorts of cool stories to go with it. But there's two haunted stories. It's haunted, they believe, by the captain that shot himself, and then by one of the crew members. And we always tell that story when we're going through it. But in the evening, when everyone's gone and they have to shut down the submarine, I'm not the only one who has gone through there and at times has done it very quickly, because you're just pretty sure as you walk through, you're just not alone walking through there. And you know that there's someone following you. And there's been a couple times where not only me, but like I said, other members have either said, want to go in and said, I need someone else to come with me, or have closed it in record time because they're pretty sure that there was someone that was watching them. And they just didn't want to be around that person, or whoever was watching them really wanted them to leave. So when anyone goes on the tour, they got to listen to the ghost stories, because I'm pretty sure there's some truth to some of those.
Oh, great story. Fred, comment?
Well, the comment would be she's absolutely right, especially the story relating to the captain that committed suicide. Fellow by the name of Zerps, I think his name was. But, yeah, he was the second captain, and he took a gun to his head during a depth charge attack. And, in fact, the crew was so angry with him because he didn't do the job right. He was still alive. They brought him into his bunk, put him in his bunk, and then he kept thrashing about. And, of course, the enemy could hear that noise. So they ended up literally strangling him with a pillow to be done with him. And what disturbed him was that, what disturbed the crew greatly, was that they needed him, and they needed him for the leadership that he would provide, and here this guy just checked out on him. So, indeed, if there's a cursed soul that would be aboard that ship, certainly by the stories, it would be that of the captain.
Oh, thank you. Thanks, Anna. Appreciate it very much. Again, you can join us at 1-800-642-1234, or in Madison at 263-1890. Give us a call with your questions and comments. What's the story associated with St. Martin Island in Lake Michigan at the entrance to Green Bay? You've got a story on that.
Yeah, there's a couple tales that are involved with St. Martin Island. One of them, I think, that would be the cutest, for want of a better word, is the old lightkeeper there, apparently, at least so goes the tale, had a couple of children that would go to school over on Washington Island. And the older child would row the boat across to Washington Island with the younger one in it, and they would do this every day. And at one, as they were coming back in the evening, they got into a squall, and in front of the lightkeeper's eyes, the boat capsized, both children drowned. Of course, that devastated the father, the lightkeeper. And as the story goes, his ghost continues to walk the shore with a green lantern in hand, looking to recover the bodies of his two lost children that never were recovered. So that's one of the tales involving Martin Island.
Yeah. We did a program on Monday regarding the Armistice Day storm of 1940.
Uh-huh.
A lot of people died in that one, but several ships also went down on the Great Lakes. Are you familiar with that event?
Yeah, very.
I wonder, are there any stories connected with those ships?
There's no ghost stories that I'm aware of connected with that storm. Of course, it was an absolutely devastating storm. And really, I think the most famous tale that probably came out of it involved the rescue of the crew of the Davik. Rather the Novadoc, by the fishermen out of Pentwater. That was one of those instances where the Coast Guard crew refused to go out.
Yeah.
And a couple of fishermen just went out, took the tug, and made the rescue, and to the great embarrassment of the local Coast Guard station.
Oh. Jim in La Crosse, your turn. Hi, Jim.
Hi. I was wondering, love your show, by the way. I was wondering if during your research of this, I'm a big fan of the show Ghost Hunters, and I particularly enjoy the idea of this group taps and at a as much of an attempt of a scientific investigation as possible. I was wondering if you had any contact with those people or discussed anything with them.
I've never discussed anything with TAPS. Did speak with them a couple months ago when they were up at the university here doing a show. And certainly people, I think, that approach the problem right, trying to figure out what is the natural explanation for it without looking for a supernatural exploration. or explanation. And some of the groups that I've worked with have taken that same approach. They go in with the instrumentation and they're trying to determine indeed what is the scientific cause of whatever the phenomena is before leaping to the conclusion that it's Aunt Tilly trying to tell you a message.
All right. Thanks, Jim. Errol in Milwaukee, your turn now. Hi, Errol.
Hey, how you doing, guys?
Good.
Happy Halloween. About 15 years ago, I was living just on Highway N off of 59 in Eagle, Wisconsin. And my buddy and I, we lived next to an old resort. I think it was called Eagle Springs Resort. And it's a fresh spring coming out of a waterfall and a lake there, and the rainbow trout are there now. But at one point, it was a brewery. And I lived on a farm for about 4 years adjoining that area. And I think it was called Eagle Springs. And what happened was we were out walking around in the evening that night by the water, and out of the corner of my eye, we saw a light. And this is a strange phenomenon to me because being a photographer, I know all the types of different lighting situations that I've seen through the past. And this is kind of a blue light that came out of the ground on the side of the woods there, and it slowly rose up and opened up, and then it started kind of drifting down towards the river, and it all happened in about 20 minutes. So we meet, it's all slowly going down towards the river. We ran over to the house to find out if my girlfriend was okay. We never saw it again, but what happened was, I think about 3 months later, my girlfriend saw the same light occur again later on in the field, an adjoining field coming out of the ground. She couldn't explain it either. But to me, it's something that's totally a phenomenon. I don't know if there's some kind of a situation where there's kind of a memory that occurs in that area on some special day, or some kind of phenomenon where you're in a different type of time lapse or something. Or what do you think, guys?
No. Well, I don't know. What do you think, Fred?
Well, I think it's swamp gas, but to use that explanation, I don't know. There's a couple of stories that involve that kind of thing, particularly around swampy areas, low areas to the lake, and folks will associate them with various ghostly activity. I've never seen one. I can't speak to it, and I certainly can't give you a scientific explanation for it. But it's certainly something that's a real phenomenon. It gets a lot of people excited.
Thanks, Errol. Mike in Milwaukee, your turn. Hi, Mike.
Thanks for taking my call, Eric.
Sure.
I have a question to your guest about, in the 1990s, I read an article in the Journal Sentinel here in Milwaukee, but apparently there was some type of a reported sightings of a Sasquatch-like creature in the Appleton area, Appleton, Wisconsin area. Would you know anything about that?
No, I don't.
Sasquatch-type creature in the Appleton area.
No, doesn't ring a bell at all. You can find Sasquatch reports or Bigfoot reports almost everywhere in the Midwest, and I would suggest probably almost everywhere in the country.
Yep.
We just had a quote search operation up here in Marquette County at the end of the summer, where I think they had 50 people out in the woods looking for a Sasquatch, and each one of them privileged to be there after paying only $550 to the search organizer. So I'm taking a tone of a little bit of skepticism on it.
All right. Thank you, Mike. Dave in Augusta, hello to you.
Hi, Larry. How you doing?
Good.
This is another story from Hayward, Wisconsin. When the Chippewa Flowage was formed in 1929 by the damming of the Winter Dam,
yes,
which backed up several lakes and rivers, there was an Indian town called Old Post. Within 5 to 7 days, that town became flooded, and including the town was the church cemetery. They removed most of the graves from that cemetery before it became flooded. However, there are 5 to 10 graves that are still there. 2 or 3 are on an island called Graveyard Point, but some are underneath the water. If you go there and you bring a camera and you take photos of the tombstones and the cemetery that's remaining, you will get these big, bright orange spots in the middle of your pictures. And I don't know if that's because of the way the sun comes through the white pines that are on the island, or is there something else? Do you got any explanation for that?
Well, there's some of the paranormal researchers look at those orbs, which is what you're describing, and really think that that's the encapsulated spirit or energy field of a ghost, if you will. And they place great credit in them. And there's another group of paranormal researchers that claim it's nothing but natural explanation, dust on a camera lens, dust in the air, perhaps, as you alluded to, a light coming through the trees. So I don't know. But again, that's a common manifestation that a lot of folks will accept as being evidence of paranormal activity.
Interesting. Yeah, talking about being underwater, you do write about both shipboard and underwater ghosts.
Yeah, and that's one of the emerging things from the whole genre, I think, is the idea that if we can have ghosts in houses, or we can have ghosts at murder sites or sites that have particularly violent histories, then why would we not have a ghost on a ship that sank with the loss of the crew? And from some evidence, at least obviously anecdotal evidence, people claiming to have experienced it, that's what's happening, where divers have been working through some of the sunken wrecks and had the experience of bumping right into a ghostly crewman. At least, again, wow. That's the stories they tell. And more will come, certainly, as more ships are explored and more divers are willing to talk about it.
Julie in Green Bay, your turn now. Hi, Julie.
Hi, how are you doing today?
Good.
Say, listen, I know you're talking about ship-related kinds of things, but being that the author's from Marquette, I had to just call and see if he knew anything about some of the stories that go around the Northern Michigan University. My daughter was a resident assistant up there, and they would go through and turn off the lights and shut the doors, and then they'd look her back, and their light would come back on the door. They'd go there, and the door would be open and unlocked. That was one of many happenings that would happen in the dorms, with lights going on and off after they knew that they had been off and doors had been locked.
I was going to say, there's a fair number of stories about the university. One of them involves a janitor who apparently died of a heart attack in one of the elevators in the Thomas Fine Arts Building.
Yeah.
And reportedly, his spirit is still in that elevator, as well as backstage in the Forrest A. Roberts Theater.
Oh, really?
The image, again, of the old janitor and some of the activities that go on that they attribute to him. So you're right, there's a number of ghostly tales associated with Northern.
Yeah.
And again, I suspect every university has its set of ghost stories, too.
Yeah. And then there's also an orphanage near there, too, as well as a light on a railroad track, and that's more closely towards Iron Mountain. That's supposed to be kind of an eerie setting that the college students like to go and check out as well.
That's known as the Paulding Light. And lots of stories about the Paulding Light. If you just do a Google on Paulding Light, it'll pop up, and you'll have not only directions how to find it, but the Forest Service down there actually has a sign explaining it.
Oh, really?
So the federal government is now in the ghost business. And the orphanage in town, too, is known to be, or at least claimed to be, by our local paranormal bunch as a center of ghostly activity.
Interesting. Thanks, Julie. Thanks for calling. And let's go to Dave in Bayfield next. Dave, hello to you.
Hi, I was wondering if Mr. Stonehouse had any comments at all on the Christmas ship that apparently left the north and went down on its way to Chicago.
Yeah, that was the Rose Simmons. The Rose Simmons left the little northern Michigan town of Thompsonville, I think, with a load of Christmas trees. And she would sink somewhere off of Two Harbors, Wisconsin. I want to say 1927 maybe was the date of loss. All hands, about 14, 15 men. Discovered 1971, I think, in about 200 feet, 180 feet of water perhaps, filled with Christmas trees. I haven't heard any ghost stories associated with that, but it's an interesting phenomenon now that everybody tries to make the Christmas tree ship this wonderful super thing, that this good feel-good story. And the reality is she was a rotten boat that had no business being out on the lake at all. And it was only because he had a greedy, money-grubbing owner that it all sent it up there to do this trade that really, had that happened today, he would have been in jail had he survived the shipwreck. But today we've so sold it as a feel-good story that we've actually got the Coast Guard replicating the trip every fall, bringing Christmas trees down to Chicago. And, well, the joke was you bought the Christmas tree from the ship in the Chicago River, as opposed to going out to the Kmart parking lot and buying your tree. So strictly a low-end merchandising scheme.
And the as I recall, those Christmas trees would occasionally float up and wind up on shore somewhere.
Oh, yeah. They eventually would pop up out of the ship. But, again, so many of them were jammed into it that the cargo holds today are absolutely just filled solid with the trees.
Hmm. Interesting. Thanks, Dave. Boo in Frightstown. Hi to you.
Yeah, I wonder if your guest knows why the spirit crossed the road.
Why did the spirit cross the road?
I have no idea.
To get back from the other side.
Oh boy. Boo in Frightstown. That's enough of you. Thanks a lot for calling. Is it fair to say that sailors are among the most superstitious people on Earth?
Oh, I certainly think they are. When you think of all of the sailing superstitions that are out there, everything from, you know, don't whistle on a ship because it's a way of whistling up the wind, the idea that launching a ship, when you launch one, everything has to be perfect. The bottle has to break on the first strike. Ship's got to slide right in the water without a hitch. You never launch a ship on a Friday, never conduct ship's business on a Friday, never start a season on a Friday. All of this whole idea of the Friday curse is involved deeply, I think, in the sailing psyche. Never have a cat on a ship, bad luck, but rats are good. Idea that when you leave the dock on your trip, on your journey, you're supposed to take a handful of silver coins and throw them over your right shoulder as an offering to the devil in the deep blue sea. Or it's always putting a silver coin under the mast of a sailboat. And the coin, would always have to be head up and always had to be silver. And even today, when you're doing some of the underwater archaeology work and actually are able to remove the mast stub and look, 9 times out of 10, you find the silver coin there. So it was an old superstition that they've believed in and followed.
Mike and Kakana, your turn now. Hi, Mike.
I'm calling about the caller who wanted to know about the Sasquatch-type creature in the Appleton area.
Yeah.
We used to call it the Yeti, and it was seen by parkers and drinkers or hunters that they peep hunters coming out of the woods.
Mm-hmm.
And for a long time, nobody ever saw it that was credible, of course. For a long time, the snowmobile clubs used to have a Yeti search, and they'd put a big stuffed animal in the woods someplace, and they would all look for the Yeti.
Well, those are the kinds of stories that, Fred, I'm sure you've heard many of.
Well, yes, and it's really, again, a way, I think, of taking our folklore and enjoying it still today.
You had in your, I believe it was Haunted Lakes 2, you had a story on UFOs.
Oh, absolutely. You've got to include those in the whole mix here. I mean, the whole idea of alien abduction and some of the UFOs that have been seen over the Great Lakes area, again, just a continuing piece of drama. There's even a story that in the eastern end of Lake Ontario, there's a UFO spaceport, and that's located in the Sophiasburg Peninsula area, where the locals claim that there's so much UFO activity there, it's really because they have this multi-dimensional spaceport where the ships come in from one dimension, pass through to another dimension, and that's kind of like the O'Hare of the alien industry, I guess.
We talked about underwater ghosts and shipboard ghosts. There's also ghosts that you talk about that bridge the gap between water and land. Have you got a good story connected to that?
Well, yeah, certainly there are those stories. And there's one that takes place in Lake Huron where a ship sinks offshore. I believe the name of the ship was the Union, though I'm really dredging here a little bit. The entire crew was lost with the ship, 5, 6, 8 guys. But yet, in the following year, on the anniversary of the loss of that ship in a storm, a lifeboat will come into the beach
these ghostly figures will get out of the lifeboat and will walk ashore single file and then simply 100 yards or so down the trail just disappear. And as the family tale goes, the family that I got the story from, this little episode would replicate itself every year on the anniversary of the loss of that ship. So again, you've got something coming from the water and coming into the land and then disappearing. There's a pervasive tale that takes place outside of Chicago, a cemetery known as Bachelor's Grove, I think, just a little bit north of the city, where the ghost of a naval aviator is seen to crawl out of the water, cross the highway, and then disappear into the cemetery on the other side of the road. And they date that back from World War II, when they were doing an awful lot of certifying and training of naval aviators. Great Lakes Naval Station, they had taken a couple of the old cruise ships on the Great Lakes, sliced them off, thrown a carrier deck on top, and then were using those for carrier qualification landings. And, of course, not every landing is one you walk away from. And in this instance, supposedly, the pilot was killed in the attempt, but his ghost continues to try and go back to the cemetery.
Oh. Do you, of all of your stories, is there a favorite one that you have that you'd like to tell us on this Halloween day?
Sure, because I think it takes history and it puts it into the sharp focus for a lot of us, and that would be this one. You know, we all understand the wreck of the Edmund Fitzgerald, and if you go into any school in the Great Lakes area, any grade school, ask the kids, give me two shipwrecks, they're going to give you Titanic and they're going to give you Fitzgerald. Well, if there ever was a ship that was cursed from the beginning, if one believes such things, it would be Fitzgerald. Because when they launched it, it took Mrs. Edmund Fitzgerald three strikes with the bottle before it broke. Remember, it's supposed to break on the first strike. When she finally went down the ways after being delayed a few minutes, she continued on and struck the dock on the other side, injuring the boat. That's strike two. One of the spectators drops dead of a heart attack. That's strike three. And, of course, they named the ship after a schooner, Edmund Fitzgerald, that was lost in Lake Erie in the 1880s. So that's strike four. So if you want to say a ship was cursed from the beginning,
oh, man.
It would be the Fitzgerald.
Well, that's a great story and probably a great way to wind it up, Fred. Thank you so much for being with us today. Again, what's your website?
It's just www.frederickstonehouse.com.
F-R-E-D-E-R-I-C-T.
R-I-C-K, yep.
Here. Pleasure. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Well, thanks for having me, and happy Halloween.
Happy Halloween to you as well. Frederick Stonehouse of Marquette, Michigan, the author of more than a dozen books about Great Lakes maritime history. And his books include Haunted Lakes and Haunted Lakes 2, published by Lake Superior Port Cities Incorporated. He's got Haunted Lake, Michigan, Ghost Stories, Shipwrecks, and Scary Mysteries of That Great Lake, and Haunted Lake Huron, Lake Myths, Wrecks, and Spirits, and others as well. So take a look at his website, and you may want to tell you what, there's some entertaining stories in those books. Coming up, we're going to sort of continue our theme and talk about some shocking stories of Wisconsin's most notorious killers. Our guest, Martin Hintz of Milwaukee, has a new book out. We'll talk with him about his book, Got Murder, published by Trails Books. Coming up next year on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.